to me, that's almost a slap in the face to the coach. Like, hey, we're still the better team. So you just got out-coached by 40? I don't buy that for a minute. They seem to kind of let go of the rope after they let one go, and I get that, but that's on some players too. And, you know, to me, watching what they did, they came out, ran a couple plays. The Knicks made adjustments. The Cavs did not. You go back to when they cut it to 16. They ran a play. They ran to the baseline. Jared Allen cuts post to post, gets a little sweeping hook, and I'm like, okay, they figured out some holes in it. After that, then they were just turning. It seemed like they all turned and looked at Mitchell or Harden to bail them out. One guy ain't bailing you out of a 16-point hole. And Kenny Atkinson was losing his mind. He was like, run the plays. I mean, you can only call them so many times before guys don't run them. You know, any sport, if I call a pitch and the pitcher goes something else and gets hit to the moon, who's that on? If you call a play, send a play in, and you call for a quick slant to get 5 yards, and the quarterback and wide receiver goes, nah, man, we're going fly route, and it gets picked off, who's that on? That's not the play you call. So I don't know. I don't know how much is there to that, but kind of the things I saw, the Knicks just never – wavered, even though the lead was getting chopped into. They just locked in and said, here we go. You're going to be the first team to call a timeout. And when that happened, I was like, this thing is done. It's over.
No, I think you're 100% right. They had an answer for everything.
Everything.
And that goes to show. I mean, right now their margin of victory is the best in NBA playoff history. It's better than the 17 Warriors. It's better than any of the Jordan Bulls teams. It's better than the 0-1 Lakers. I mean, we're talking about historic levels. And I get it. You can throw out the East asterisk, but it's like, hey, man, there's been a lot of teams that aren't that good in the playoffs great teams have gotten to play, and they're just absolutely smoking them.
Atlanta was solid, and they nearly had them down at halftime by 50.
Yeah.
That's like a UConn women's team playing a low-level, mid-major, just for a paycheck game, and that was the NBA. And
playoffs.
Atlanta never recovered. And they were good. The Knicks were just playing on a different level. And so it's possible. It's possible that they are just that good.
Eric, we really appreciate it. Good luck getting back to the camps.
Thanks, brother. Appreciate you.
That is Eric Hasseltine, Memphis Grizzlies Radio Network play-by-play announcer. We come back. Let's get into the list. Lots to get to from the world of sports that we haven't talked about from the weekend. We'll talk about it next with Tim right here on Jeff Wright & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.
The top 10 rankings that everybody's going to want. Tim and I will both rank our top 10 college football quarterbacks at the top of the next hour. Both of us famously last year did not include Fernando Mendoza in either of our rankings, so you're going to want to make sure you pencil these in. So we'll talk about that at the top of the next hour. Before we do any of that, let's get into the list. Playoff wars? All right, Tim, it seems to me that right now the SEC is standing firm. Now, the SEC standing firm, I think, should be noted as Greg Sankey and, I think, by proxy, SEC presidents. The coaches are obviously wanting more and more expansion. And that's probably self-serving because I have to give full respect to Tim Elko, who was asked how big the playoff should be.
Mike Elko,
beg your pardon. Tim Elko is a different guy. I don't know why you would ask us. It doesn't matter what we think. I don't know why we're trying to become a trophy sport. What does Mike Elko want? 40. Then I won't get fired. It's okay to make the playoff hard, or it's okay to make it hard to get to the playoff. So I respect Mike Elko for saying it out loud. There's not a coach out there that's advocating it, that's thinking about the good of the sport, they're thinking about the good of themselves. So I appreciate that. I think, though, what is more interesting is, okay, the SEC standing firm right now. But what happens when we get to the, let's say when we get to playoff selection time, and you've got 12 teams, and now that the SEC's added an extra conference game, what happens when a lot of these 9-3 teams are not looking as good as some of these other teams and they get left out? Is that when the SEC changes their mantra?
Well, let's just make it simple. What happens if the committee did what they should have done this year and penalized Alabama for getting embarrassed in the SEC championship game? They penalized BYU. but they didn't penalize Alabama. What if they had done what we all thought they were going to
do? So I guess I'll say the one line of demarcation, BYU was technically the 2 seed in the Big 12 game. Alabama, through 85 different tiebreakers, though, was the regular season SEC champion. Even though I agree with you, eye test-wise, you're like, that team shouldn't be here.
I mean, they didn't have 100 yards of offense until, like, garbage time in the fourth quarter. But my point is, if they were left out this year, would they be more on board now? I don't know. I think the SEC, if I had to guess, is fine with it going to 16. And how much also are they getting their marching orders from ESPN?
So I definitely think Sankey and the presidents are thinking that way. I think the coaches and the ADs, I think the ADs are trying to keep their coaches happy, and they're thinking that way. And then the coaches are thinking in a self-serving fashion.
Well, and I think for the SEC.
But I also think that the opposite. I do not think the Big Ten is thinking about the good of the sport. I think the Big Ten is thinking about what Fox wants.
Of course. Yeah, I mean, I would say of the two conferences, I would say the Big Ten is more so marching to Fox's beat because Fox wants to be in on the playoff. The ACC and the Big 12, it makes sense that they want to expand because they're not as strong of a conference. So if we go to 24, they've got more opportunities to get into the field of 24. And that's why I think Petitti at the Big 10 did a smart decision in kind of reaching out, I think he did, to the ACC and the Big 12 and saying, hey, let's scrap that crazy idea that I brought up last year and let's just make it simple. 24 teams, 5 auto bids for conference champions, and then we move on. And, you know, and I think that's where it became more ideal for the Big 10 and the ACC to say, well, now we could potentially get more teams in. I mean, the SEC and the Big Ten right now are fine. And I think for the SEC, if it goes to 16, if it went to 16 this year, Texas gets in. Does anyone else get in?
So if maybe 16, Vandy.
So if it was 16.
Well, the other question is, are we saying if it went to 16, are we using last year where they didn't cap the G6?
So if last year.
So because this year we're going to cap. The G6 only gets one team in regardless. You know what I mean?
Okay.
Unless they're ranked inside the top whatever.
So last year we would have got Notre Dame, BYU, Texas, and Vandy would have all gotten in if it was a 16-team playoff. Those were the next 4 teams.
I'm trying to think.
I guess maybe Virginia. I don't know. Maybe Virginia gets in. I can't remember because they won the ACC. No, they didn't win. They lost to Duke.
They lost to Duke.
Maybe Duke gets in. I don't know.
I don't think. I think Duke. I don't know.
Duke didn't even finish in the top 25.
Correct.
Of the rankings.
But I think that was orchestrated. Because I think if they would have been in the top 25, don't they get in as the ACC champion?
No, they needed to be ahead of James Madison. James Madison was
24th. Right, because, yeah. I don't know. I guess the other problem I have with this is, like, are we really certain? Like, show me where 12's not working.
I think 12 is just fine. I think the more I've thought about it, look, I have been... I'm all in on 12, even as a Notre Dame fan who his team got left out. Like, don't lose 2 games. I think 12 is a good number. I've always said auto bids are dumb, and I don't think we should have auto bids. And the reason I said we shouldn't have auto bids was for exactly what happened this year, which is a crazy tiebreak scenario. Duke with 4 losses gets into the championship and wins the championship. And it's like, well, now what are you going to do? And now we've got Tulane and James Madison in this thing, and nobody wants to see Tulane and James Madison in this thing.
Yeah, we shouldn't change everything because the ACC had a terrible tiebreaker scenario.
I just think, I mean, we'll never get to it because what's crazy to me is the two conferences that hold all the power, which are the SEC and the Big Ten, both of them have always stated, we need auto bids. Well, I guess the SEC didn't, right? The SEC's like, nah, we
no, the SEC has always wanted essentially all at-larges.
Who's pushing back on that? Because the Big 12
the
and the
Big
ACC,
10.
Why?
Fox, there's something about pushing it to 24 that makes it opened up to where Fox can.
No. I get the 24. I understand the push. My question is reverting back to just 12, the 12 best teams.
Well, I think then you get into the, now how much does their opinion matter? But that's where you're obviously going to see the ACC and the Big 12 push back.
Right. But they don't have power.
Correct. In the end, so, like when everyone does the whole, well, it's 9-1 now, it's like, not really. It's 1-1.
They'll convince, the Big Ten and the SEC can convince everyone else to do whatever they want. The only reason we're not to 24 right now is because the two powers can't come to an agreement, right?
Correct.
So my thing is, and I guess it'll never happen, and that's where I kind of run into, like, these, you know, talking heads on networks, they all get fired up about all of this. And I'm like, at the end of the day, I don't know. We don't really have a say over the matter, so I'm just going to accept what it ends up being. But if I had a perfect scenario, I think I want 12 no auto bids. And then we don't have the ridiculous situation 2 years ago where Boise State gets a bye, which we're like, what? Why does Boise State have a bye? Penn State not have a bye, right? And then we get what we get last year. Like, how much better is last year's tournament if Notre Dame's at Ole Miss and BYU's at Oregon as opposed to James Madison at Oregon and Tulane at Ole Miss?
I mean, I think I would even argue, like, because, like, let's say this year you're going to get one in, provided. I just think the bigger problem is, like, if you just would have put in Notre Dame over JMU, and again, JMU did nothing wrong. We talked about this. Like, they didn't politic their way. Like, the season broke the way the season did.
Yeah.
But if Notre Dame is in, well, then all of a sudden we're talking about in the first weekend, three of the four games are probably pretty good.
I mean, just think about it. And look, Ole Miss made a magical run. You know, the fan base, I'm sure, is beyond thrilled how it all broke, right? But think about how different that game is if you had Notre Dame in Oxford to take on Ole Miss. And maybe they win. And if Ole Miss beats Notre Dame on their home floor or field, excuse me, like, is that the best win in school history? I guess until they, you know, won the next round.
Yeah, I mean, I think right now you have to say the Georgia win.
Game.
But I mean, you know, it's now entered into the pantheon of greatest home wins ever.
Sure.
I mean, they beat Alabama the day Katy Perry was there. You know, yeah, the September 19th. I mean, that is a game that, like, the mind really struggles to comprehend.
Like, you just think back to last year, and it's like, and once again, to your point, it's not James Madison's fault. And I know there are people out there like, see, they scored all this point. Like, come on, let's be real. Oregon had a dude drop the ball going into the end zone. They were up by 40. They could name the score. Like, it was non-competitive. And same thing about Tulane going to Ole Miss. Like, I am as pro mid-major as anybody out there. They don't deserve, it's a participation trophy, man. Like, if you earn your way in, great. Cincinnati earned their way into the top four a couple years ago.
Yeah, this was Bud Elliott's note from last week. In the playoff era, G5, G6 teams are 4-7 in New Year's Six Bowls with an average scoring margin of 7.3 points per game. In the CFP games, they're 0-4, losing by 21.5 points per game. The scoring margin triples. Motivation does matter. It is different. I wholeheartedly agree.
Right now, because we don't have a say, I think there's two realities. Where are we headed? And what would we like? And what I would like a 12-team playoff with no auto bids. I'd be okay with 16 because I think there is something cool about, you know, the top four seeds getting a home game as well. You know, I don't know how you accomplish that and have conference championship games.
In your 16, are 1 through 16 playing each other, or are you doing the bye?
1 through 16 are playing each other.
Okay, so I agree with you. Yes, I'm in complete agreement there.
Like, I think if we went, as much as I have been pro 12, I think if we went to 16, that weekend is now a top three weekend in sports.
So to your question of where we're headed, I don't know. Because clearly it is going to expand. But the question is when and how. So the reason why I say that is, okay, let's say that the SEC, neither side's really backing down. The SEC is basically saying, we want to cap it at 16. The Big 12 saying, we're not even thinking about that. It's either 12 or 24. Neither team really, or neither conference really has any incentive to back down. If you're the Big Ten, why are you all that upset with this system? It's worked for you. You've gotten the last three national champions. You're basically getting 3 to 4 teams in every single year. Why would you care? Okay, so I don't see them backing down. The question that I have is, what happens if we just play out the contract and we finish the 12-team playoff with 12 teams? Well, what happens when the contract ends?
And it ends in 2030.
I think it ends with the TV deals, 31.
Okay.
Does that mean, because like my thought is at that point, it feels like there's no way that it stays at 12. But does that mean that the Big Ten gets their way? Does that mean the SEC gets their way? Does that mean that they just figure out a new way to come up with 12 teams? Like, that's where I start to go. If they just keep kicking the can down the road, what does that mean? Because I can see where both conferences are not going to back down and we just kind of stay at 12 for the next 5 years.
So has the SEC said anything about 16?
The SEC, if they're going to expand, they want to expand to 16 and basically cap it.
So here's why. And I know it's a small sample size. If it goes to 16, they get three more teams in 2024. Bama, Ole Miss, South Carolina. And if it goes to 24, they don't get anyone else. Oh, they get Missouri. So you throw in Missouri as well. In 2025, if it's at 16, they get Texas and Vanderbilt. And if they move it out to 24, they didn't get anyone else in. I think they're looking at it from a television standpoint, once again, with the ESPN deal that they have, which is bigger than the Big Ten's with Fox?
No, not anymore. Okay. This year it kicked in because, well, the Big Ten's is complicated because technically Fox owns all the rights, but then Fox sublicenses it to CBS and to NBC, and they get in that way. But pure TV dollars, the Big Ten gets more.
I'm looking at the teams that would have been in this year at 16. And I'm like, yeah, those are all really good teams. And then I'm looking at 24 and I'm like, I mean, I get it. Iowa beat Vanderbilt in the bowl game. But these are the teams that get in if we go to 24. Michigan, Arizona, Virginia, Houston, Georgia Tech. Like, did anyone think those teams were capable? And now you can make the argument it's more football. It's like a bowl game. And I guess I'd listen to it.
I mean, the problem is nobody's making the good faith argument. The reality is the reason why ADs want it is you keep the illusion that your team is in it for longer.
Sure.
And therefore, people more likely to buy tickets, more likely to be interested. But it's not improving the product. And I think the larger problem is I don't see the SEC having a problem with access. I see the SEC having a problem. It's Topmeyer's stat. In the playoff era against the Big Ten and Notre Dame, they're 0-5 in the expanded playoff era.
Which is kind of jarring, right? Because that's not what it was 6 years ago.
I mean, I think this is where...
Just wait until we play each other. Just wait till we play you, and we're going to smack you.
Well, I think two things. I think two things are at play. Number one, you definitely have had some Big Ten schools that are more willing to get involved in this space rather than the under-the-table era. That's the common refrain from the Big Ten. I think it's overblown, but I also think there's something to it. I also think what has happened is inside the league, you've kind of opened up the opportunity for the middle class to move up. And by the middle class moving up, you see the best SEC teams not having the depth and whatnot. And now in this, you know, in an under-the-table era, the middle class team would probably just go on probation and then you get sent back down. But in this era, there's nothing that stops them and prevents them. And so you've spread out the talent more. And so the best SEC team is not stockpiling all the players. But it also, like, look at it in these terms. Okay, Georgia plays Notre Dame and their starting quarterback gets hurt. Stockton played fine. But really what happened is Notre Dame made basically three big plays and took control of the game, and Georgia offensively couldn't catch up. But it was like a close back-and-forth game. Texas loses to Ohio State because, for whatever reason, first and goal from the one, they decided to not sneak it. And lo and behold, like that was going to be a Final Four game. And does that Texas team beat Notre Dame?
Maybe.
I mean, they would have been favored. Mm-hmm. But, like, does that mean they win? I don't know. Like, so they've been kind of close, but they're not, like, they've been losing the toss-ups. But I think that's kind of the other thing that's, like, when you expanded it out in those games, that's the other aspect of it. It's like, I don't think TV is knocking down the door to just throw another Brinks truck full of cash so that they can get, remind me, Iowa, Missouri.
The extra teams in this year, if we went to 24, Arizona, Houston, Georgia Tech, Iowa, those are teams that would be...
And as you and I agreed, like, those were good football teams, but Virginia, at the same time, it's like, are those fine marquee television events?
No. I think, and look, maybe this past year was an anomaly. It might have been. But the teams that get left out, once again, when we were dealing with auto bids, Notre Dame, massive brand. BYU has a brand. Texas left out. Like, you're talking about, if you go to 16, those are some big name programs that got left on the doorstep. 2 years ago, Alabama got left out of 16. And now you can make the argument, I'm sure a lot of people are, it has to be hard. Okay. Like, I'm cool with 12 remaining. I'm totally cool with it. I don't necessarily, as someone who spends a Tuesday night watching Central Michigan versus Western Michigan, I love football. I love college football. I love bowl games. I love it all. If we go to 24, I'm not going to pull the old, bah, I'm not going to watch. Hell yeah, I'm going to watch, of course. But I don't necessarily need Houston playing for a national championship when they were the 21st team in the country this past year.
I think the other thing that's interesting that's happening down in Destin, we're now getting more and more talk of the SEC saying, well, we'll come up with our own rules. I guess that's my question, is what does that look like? Because I do not see them writing rules that will put them at a disadvantage to the Big Ten. Like, the only thing I can see is if they can't figure out how to get all this money that's tied up in the NIL Go CSC, I can see them essentially saying, hey, you know all those rules we told you we wanted? Never mind. Like, and release the funds so that we can get these guys paid. But I do not see them coming up with capping money and then the Big Ten goes, thank you, and then they just have better rosters. There's just no way I see all that.
Yeah, I mean, it seems like as of now, we're just headed to a standstill. We're just going to have 12 for another couple more years. And to your point, maybe we just run out the clock here.
And that's kind of my question is, what happens after that clock strikes triple zeros?
Well, then I think the inevitable happens. I mean, who knows where we're at from a television standpoint, all of that. But then everybody gets involved now, and you've got ESPN, you've got Fox, you've got, do you have one of these streaming services in 4 years? How different does the media landscape look in 4 years if they run this clock?
I don't think
out?
Anybody has a great answer for that.
Right. So it's like, I mean, are we talking about Amazon being involved? Are we talking about Netflix being involved? I mean, we know that Amazon wants in. Look at the deals they cut with Duke for basketball. There were reports that the Notre Dame-USC game was being shopped to Netflix, and the Big Ten basically looked at USC and said, what are you doing?
Like, no.
We're in a media deal. No, you can't have that. So I don't know. Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I would say this. If you are a college football fan that is, I want to keep it at 12, this is kind of the best case scenario right now for the Big Ten and the SEC to be at a standoff.
No.
Because if it was the ACC, the ACC was like, oh, we want 12. It's like, okay, buddy, sit in the corner, let the big boys talk.
The adults are talking here.
Yeah. But the adults are talking, and the adults can't come to an agreement right now, so it seems like we'll just kind of hang with 12.
All right, the enhanced games. Okay, so are these happening in Vegas?
I think so.
Okay, so couple of things. Number one, we've really only had one, air quotes, world record broken. The other thing that was a little surprising, someone released like the what is everybody on here? I'm a little disappointed in the PED game. Everyone's just basically doing testosterone and HGH. Like, have we not innovated in that space? Where are the disruptors? Like, do we really miss Balco that much? Because I think that's the other thing is, I did like the, who was the sprinter? Curly, who's currently not allowed to race because of conveniently missing every Olympic testing. So has been suspended, but he's going to run clean in 2028 in LA. You know what I mean? I've actually like gone the other way. It's like some people have been like, see, this is like what happens. Like the steroids don't do anything. Now my answer is like, nah, I think a lot of the guys that are just in guys and gals that are in all these other sports, like they're just better at not getting caught. Because also what the enhanced games has shown is the experiment doesn't need to be house, you know, like run-of-the-mill athlete juices. Like, we need to see, like, what happens when the best of the best do it. Like, what?
Bonds.
Yeah. Like, the problem is, it's like, you can't just take Tim and myself, juice us up, and then we're all of a sudden elite athletes. Like, that's not how it works. But that's kind of been what I've been fascinated to see is because it appears.
So are any of the true elite athlete, now I know there was a world record broken, but like, are any of the best actually participating in this thing?
Curly is the best sprinter that,
okay,
but in general the answer would be no.
Like Katie Ledecky's not involved in this.
Correct.
Now I know it's all sprinting and she's not a sprinter from a swimming standpoint, but it does just remind us of the all-time SNL skit of the all-drug Olympics.
Well, or as one of my dad's favorite National Lampoon covers, are the East Germans cheating? And literally it was a female sprinter with just a nutsack hanging out. Who would have ever thought? I don't know. Like, this is kind of where, and by all accounts,
are people into this thing?
No.
It's happening in my city.
I'll be honest,
I didn't know about it until you just said.
So I've been reading some media critics, and they've actually been surprised that they think the presentation is good. They think it is an interesting concept, but nobody cares at all. Now, it was Memorial Day weekend. It's not on a linear channel. Like you're having to do the, it's either, I think, on YouTube, Rumble, Twitch, like it's on the streaming platforms, but it's not like on a linear channel. They don't really have the marketing budget in the pub, but most critics that I've seen that have watched it have complimented the presentation, but they have also noted nobody cares.
What's getting more publicity, the enhanced games or the no-hitter that was thrown last night in Houston?
So the combined no-hitter, which I also don't know what to think about, I know like we're in this universe where this is just a normal thing. I think it is definitely fair to say, though, the softball super regionals definitely got way more attention.
Hell yeah, they're more entertaining.
Especially the Florida-Texas Tech series.
I mean, the only reason I knew it happened was because I was working last night. And I was like, oh, there's a no-hitter going on. I mean, the guy who started the no-hitter had an 8 ERA going into last night.
We were trying to talk about this over the weekend when I was playing golf. What have been some of the milestones or the achievements that have been completely just, like, we were thinking about it. It was maybe 2013 or 14. Phil Mickelson is in Phoenix or Scottsdale, and he's got basically two holes to break 59 and breaking or to break 60. Shoot 59. 59 watch used to be something that was amazing. Now, nobody even bats an eye. I mean, Wyndham Clark shot 60 on Sunday to win a tournament. No one even talked about like the final scores. Just like, okay, well, it was a birdie fest. I think the no-hitter has been completely brought down by the combined no-hitter. It does feel like when we still have, when one guy goes nine innings, throws the perfect game, throws the no-no, it still feels special, but it doesn't feel like, all right, ESPN is breaking in to show us the last three outs.
Look, perfect games are completely different. I think people would be surprised how few perfect games there have been.
What is it, 28, 29, something like that?
I think it's less than that. I'm going to look up the exact number right now. Looks like 24 times.
That's a lot of baseball games.
It's a lot of baseball games. We've only got 24 times as this has happened. And the last time it happened was a couple years ago. If anyone can name who did it, I would give you some money. Domingo Herman for the Yankees did it at Oakland Coliseum. But prior to that, we hadn't had one since 2012. So perfect games are different. No hitters, I've made the case for a while. I'm like, at what point last night, if you were watching SportsCenter with Van Pelt, when did they even mention the no-hitter? I think Jacob Mizorowski was more mentioned last night because of his ridiculous outing. Like, his outing was more impressive than what we saw in the Houston-Texas game.
What is it? He now has 57 pitches this year over 100 miles an hour?
No. 57 pitches yesterday were over 100 miles an hour.
And what, his previous high was like 13? No. Oh, this is the question. Are the guns juiced?
I don't know what's going on with he. Let's see. The numbers.
Because I remember like
Sarah Langs was just pumping out all sorts of numbers
game,
last night.
It was like one of his last few starts. It's like he had 13 pitches over 100 miles an hour, and everybody was like, that's insane. But then to go from 13 to 57, it's like.
No. Your numbers are a bit off.
Okay, what was his previous high?
43.
Okay, that makes it better.
So on May 1st, he had 43 pitches over 100 miles an hour. On May 8th, he had 41 pitches over 100 miles an hour. And yesterday, he had 57 pitches over 100 miles an hour.
I think the problem is a combined no-hitter doesn't sound as impressive from a pitching perspective. It just sounds like you went up against a team that can't hit. It's like they threw three different guys. You couldn't get square one up.
I mean, the Houston Astros have thrown 8 no-hitters since 2012.
Didn't the Phillies get combined no-hit in the playoffs a couple of years ago?
Yes, by the Astros, I think, right?
I think that sounds right. All right, we're going to take a quick break, but before we do that, I want to remind you that no down payment necessary for your home means more offers. And if you're selling your house and you want to have as much power as possible at the negotiating table, you need to hire my friend Josh Heisel and his team from Keller Williams Realty. Josh and his team have a program that can help buyers get free down payments. Think about how many more people will be able to make an offer on your home with that kind of assistance. More offers will lead to more More offers will lead to more money when you're selling your home, and you definitely get that higher price. Josh is the only real estate agent in Memphis with a program that helps buyers get free down payments. That's the kind of incentive for buyers that makes Josh the best agent in town to list with. Josh knows how to find the buyers for everyone. His marketing system reaches thousands of potential home buyers every day and helps them routinely sell houses fast and for the most money possible. It's part of why Josh is so confident that he can sell anyone's home and for top dollar that he guarantees it. If he can't find you a buyer at a price and a deadline you agree to beforehand, he'll buy your home yourself. The website is joshhasthebuyers.com, joshhasthebuyers.com, but you can also give him a phone call and goes right to his cell phone, 461-8147, 901-461-8147. That's how you reach Josh. Also the website, joshhasthebuyers.com. We got a potential fantasy trade for Ja Morant. Let's talk about this in the framework of what it would look like when we come back. Also, we'll start off hour number three with our top 10 college football quarterbacks as we head into the 2026 season. Stick around and listen to Jeff Rett and Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN. All right, Tim. We got three potential Ja Morant trades. You ready?
Ready.
All right, so Evan Sidery over on the Everything app, X the Everything app, it's all happening there. He proposes the framework of this trade. He writes, a realistic framework for what the Grizzlies could receive in a Ja Morant trade this offseason. Get the old Orlando Magic on the phone again. The Magic would get Ja Morant, the number 32 pick in this year's draft, the 2030 first-round pick that Orlando sent in the Desmond Bane trade. So they get their 2030 back. The Grizzlies would receive Jalen Suggs, Jonathan Isaac, and Goga Batadze. So, George, you chime in if you agree. My instinct says that I don't think that that is a unreasonable trade. I just find it hard to believe that the Grizzlies are pulling the trigger on anything that includes shipping out a first-round pick.
Yeah, I think that's probably where I land. That's kind of what's been put out by the organization and by, you know, plenty of NBA media, especially when we were back at the trade deadline. The whole conversation was, well, a trade didn't get done because teams that were interested required a pretty big sweetener.
I just don't think Suggs and Isaac are interesting enough. Because, like, Batadze is basically thrown in at the end to try and make the money work.
At this point, I think kind of any Ja trade makes the money work in a way.
Yeah, because of also the trade exception.
Trade exceptions and right.
But I guess my point is that on that type of deal, I don't see the Grizzlies being willing to part way with a pick because of Suggs and Jonathan Isaac. That's where I kind of get tripped up.
How right now, with a franchise that is about to bring in the third overall pick, and in many ways he's going to be the new face of the franchise, or soon to be face of the franchise, you would hope. How desperate is this organization to get Ja out?
Incredibly, but not at the value of sending. Like, you can tell me that they get an underwhelming return, and they would be fine with that so long as they're not having to send out another first, a key asset.
So basically, you're trying to find a deal, I think, in reality, where you're just finding a team that needs to get off another contract.
So, for instance, then ESPN included in an offseason or whatever, like the transactions preview, this would be the type of deal where I could see them pulling the trigger. Get the T-Wolves on the phone.
Okay.
Minnesota gets Ja Morant. The Grizzlies would receive Julius Randle, Terrence Shannon, and Johan Berenguer. So that one is one you could talk me into. They do, because I think what their priority.
Why would the T-Wolves do that?
I guess to get Terrence off of Shannon, Randle, to get off of Randle's contract, and maybe
they're not getting rid of Terrence Shannon for Ja Morant. I think Terrence Shannon is someone they like. He played meaningful minutes.
Is Terrence going to be due money?
I don't think so. He's pretty – he's old, but not – I think
– Is there, he played on the Illinois team. So this was his rookie year, right?
Yeah. There's no
so there's no way he's going to be due money. Because that was my whole issue is I don't sense that Minnesota's
he's
that –
He's got a team option next year for $2.8 million. There's no shot they're getting rid of Terrence Shannon for Ja Morant.
No, I tend to agree. That's
and, a guy that they, a guy in reality that I could like the Wizards aren't going to trade for Ja Morant, but an Anthony Davis makes sense, right? Someone with a big contract that no one really wants at this point, right?
Seems likely. I mean, it got to the point where the Wizards basically got him because they were the ones saying, "All right, well, that price sounds good. We'll take it."
Yeah, like I mean, that's the thing is like people make fun of the Wizards, and I. Certainly enjoy making.
No, I think they've actually ever since the new guy's taken over, they've made good decisions. It's just they have isn't translated to winning basketball yet.
Right, like getting Trae Young and Anthony Davis for essentially nothing is like okay, you know,
it's a flyer of flyers.
It's like Dumb and Dumber. And what if they shot me in the face? Well, it's a risk I was willing to take.
Correct.
We got nothing. Right? Risk we're willing to take. So I'm just trying to think of like who are some of the massive contracts right now. What's Bradley Beal making these days? Like, is he still a...
I think they finally got rid of... Didn't they... I think somebody ate it. He was as of last... The beginning of the season. I think they finally cut him. I think the...
Oh, he's on the Clippers.
He's on the Clippers. I think
that's
the,
right.
I think the Suns finally ended the contract.
I think you're right.
So, like, this is another one...
Trade for James Harden.
Well, you think he's going to pick up that option?
Apparently not. I think he's going to opt out and get a 2 for $70.
Well, and then I guess the issue is, like, do the Cavs, like, you've traded for him. Do you just have to pay it?
I mean, apparently everything that, I mean, maybe soon to be fired Kenny Atkinson has said is they have, I think they like him for whatever reason.
Well, I think they have to like him.
Enjoy your regular season wins before he does what he always does in the playoffs.
So then the other ESPN one was Phoenix would get Ja.
Okay.
The Grizzlies would get in return Royce O'Neal, Haywood Highsmith, Grayson Allen's return, Jamari Bouye, a 29 second and a 32 second. Like these are all the frameworks that I could see. I guess if you made me power rank it, that's the one that I would say, like, that feels like both teams would actually make the deal. Now, that creates a roster crunch for the Grizzlies. That's a lot of players to take back, and they already have a numbers problem, but I would presume a lot of those guys they would just cut. Like, I don't know how everyone's contract works in that one.
I mean, I think we're at the point, correct me if I'm wrong, where if you're the Grizzlies and you're offloading this contract for anything – where you don't have to give up, as George mentioned, a sweetener, it's a victory.
The only problem is that, George, how would contractually they make that work? Because they're going to have to cut some of those guys if they took the Phoenix deal. So what's Royce O'Neal got left?
Let's take
3 years.
Look.
Him and Grayson both have 3 years left.
I guess my question there is kind of the number on it. I mean.
So, by the way, I just did it in the trade machine. You can trade Grayson Allen and Royce O'Neal straight up for Ja Morant. It's a successful trade. And it says, you do not affect the winning percentage of either team.
contractually, I mean, you would probably. The Grizzlies, in a way, would be fine holding on to them, not in terms of the number of contracts, but in terms of the like money on the deals.
Yeah, I'm more worried about the number of players because
it would also not shock me. So those two guys would not be available in a consolidation trade because of the weird, you know, the rule about like the time in which you're able to then trade a player again. But they've got plenty of really good contracts on the books they could move and consolidate and move up in drafts, add draft capital. If they wanted to take a swing, they could because, like you said, they've got that. It's a $28 million trade exception. So you can bring back in a ton and it not really hurt your books.
I guess the team that the team that would make sense for me is like, who's a team that doesn't have much flexibility and just wants to take a swing? Like, we want to take a Ja Morant swing because the upside is there. Like, I'm trying to think of a team that would make sense, right? Like, I looked at the Lakers, for example.
My first thought was the Clippers, maybe, but they okay. but they just traded for Garland, and they seem to like him. But, yeah, try the Lakers, because the Lakers have the whole, are they going to pay Austin Reeves?
They don't really have anyone they can trade right now. Like, they're not going to trade Luka, obviously. LeBron's a free agent. Rui's a free agent. Austin Reeves is restricted. I can't remember. Maxi Kleber's a free agent. Luke Kennard's a free agent. They don't really have anyone under contract.
Reeves
What's Bronny's deal?
Reeves is on a $14 million player option, or close to 15.
And he's extension. He wants
extension
the
eligible.
I mean,
he's
that is
probably
going
to get the money.
To me, it seems like that's the larger issue we have right now in the NBA. Is you have to decide whether or not you're going to back up the Brinks truck, career third best player.
Yeah.
And it's a legitimate question. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, the most anticipated quarterback rankings of the year. Again, these rankings famously last year did not include the Heisman Trophy winner and the number one overall pick. We'll knock off our top 10 quarterbacks as we enter the 2026 season when we come back. Right here on Jeff Rett & Company, 92.9 FM, ESPN.